Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I am so pleased today to welcome Teresa Pond to the show. As the producing artistic director at Cyrano's Theater Company, she's a leading standard bearer for performing arts in our city. I mentioned in our radio promo for today's show that we'll be talking about change and continuity. Teresa upholds three critical theater legacies, that of Sandy and Jerry Harper at Cyrano's Theater Company, which she now leads, that of Bob Pond, her father, an ACT theater director, who tossed her into theater's deep end as a mere infant, and who passed away this past summer. And with the move to Cyrano's over to its new DeBar location, she now sustains an arts center originally founded as Out North by Gene Dugan and Jay Brouse. Tall shoes to fill, indeed, but I think you'll hear in her voice the sound of a woman ready for challenge. So who is Teresa Pond really, and what was it like learning at the knees of Bob Pond? What was it like to be his daughter? What was it like to say goodbye? Transitioning Cyrano's from the Harper's downtown location to an art center on DeBar Road, while also becoming its new leader, that alone combines change and continuity in the same breath. Where will she take Cyrano's? All that and more on today's Hometown Alaska. Join us in this conversation. And actually, Teresa, you have a question for the audience, which we talked about in advance, which was, where do you want Cyrano's to go? Is that a good paraphrase of the question? What are you know, as the community thinks about these changes, what? So we'd love to hear if you have thoughts about things you'd like to see at Cyrano's, or you know, ideas you have about how Cyrano's goes forward. We'd love to hear about it. So please join us in the conversation. And I'm just going to let you know that our numbers are 550-8433 in Anchorage. And of course, we might get statewide calls. Who knows? 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage. Or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And usually I like to remind folks that as I get ready for shows, I do all this reading. And so I collect links on alaskapublic.org. So they include things like the season for Cyrano's. The link to that is there. But there's, you know, these legacies we talked about, Sandy and Jerry Harper, or even Gene and Jay Dugan, or Bob Pond, I have links there that tell us a little bit about their contributions to the arts. So I just welcome our listeners to go ahead and, if this piques your interest, go ahead and dig up that website, alaskapublic.org, select radio, select Hometown Alaska, and you'll see our show today, which is called A Theater Conversation with Teresa Pond. So, all right, well, so let's get talking. Do you want to say anything about this question you're throwing out to the audience?
I just I think it's so important if you're going to engage your life in a field that is about engaging with the community to make sure that the community is an active partner in the discussion.
Right.
You know, we're not, you know, I think hopefully most all art forms are looking for that community response. But theater particularly, you know, and performing arts are live. So the magic, the important piece of any artistic endeavor is that space between the speaker and the listener and where that art sort of crystallizes.
Right.
So, you know, what does the listener think? And you know, we're so honored at Cyrano's to have a following of patrons and attendees and artists who really support what we do. And I take that very seriously. I got that from my dad, the sense of community and respecting your relationship with the community. So, yeah, I have a partner. I have a partner in, you know, the Anchorage area that is part of these decisions, you know, and here we have opportunity. And I'm hearing a lot of people say, think of the possibilities. This fall, as we moved in, I heard that a lot as we were running around getting the spaces set up for our first show. Someone pulled me aside and stopped in the middle of the hallway, and I saw people running from one room to another. And he said, just look at all this activity. And you saw, you know, actors and technicians and volunteers. They were painting, they were cleaning, they were doing tech, they were building a prop. He said, think of the possibilities.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. So I decided that we would start actually talking about your dad.
Okay.
You know, I feel certain that he drew you back in some ways as he grew older. And you know, he is up for an award, a really prestigious award, that will be, I guess, awarded in February down in Juneau, right?
Yes, yes. I'm really thrilled about this.
It's the Governor's Award for Lifetime Achievement in the Arts.
That is correct. Right. He's getting the Governor's Award for Lifetime Achievement in the Arts.
Yeah, and you'll go down and accept it.
I will. They called me up on the phone from the State Council on the Arts, and I just started to cry. It was so touching. Mm-hmm. And then they said, now save the date. It's going to be February 8th. And I stopped in my tracks. I said, wait, when? February 8th. That is my father's birthday.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
He would be 81 years old February 8th. And
wow.
I just can't even tell you how special that is. He would be thrilled.
Will you make remarks? I will make a short remarks.
Yeah. They've put together, they're putting together like this little video with some interviews with some of his close people and myself and some photos we have of him. And I think even some, radio of him actually on stage talk. He was talking about his career last year.
Yeah.
And so we'll see kind of a video and then I'll say
make
a couple of things.
Yeah.
And so happy birthday, Dad, will probably be one of the things to say.
That's great. So, his legacy here was long. Things I noticed when I read a little bit about his history is that he did time in New York, he paid New York dues and you did too. And I was wondering whether you did that because he did that.
I probably did. Once in a while in my life, you have those moments where you think, not a midlife crisis, but that
what
identity.
Am I doing?
What am I doing?
Is this working?
Is this and, I don't know if we can tell whether I do this because it was just in my cells independently of the family I was raised in or not. I would say that it is an honor and to be following in his footsteps.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give tribute to my father. He did not grow up in a house with anyone involved in the arts whatsoever. He did not grow up in a community that supported.
He was from Boston, right?
He was from outside of Boston, Newton, Massachusetts, which is known as a very kind of upper class suburb. There were these two very poor sections of Newton. He grew up in one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, was drinking on the weekends and working in the factories, and that was your life.
Kind of a hard.
Yep, there
hard,
was kind of a bit of the mafioso environment nearby. There was it was called the lake. There was no lake, but it's called
the lake.
So anyone who's listening and you from that area, you know what it means when you say you're from the lake.
So to come here was
a big change.
Yeah. Well, do you think the military brought him here, right?
The military brought him here, in 1957, the Air Force.
But do you think the arts was some way out of the lake?
I think so. He loved it. Uh-huh. He fell in love with opera as a high school student. I mean, how can we say that in this day and age?
Yeah.
It's so something we're trying to encourage young people to follow. He loved opera from a very early age. He loved theater. He was, he was getting out of high school in the 50s. This was the age of Marlon Brando and the method acting movement. And so all of this was a big influence on him.
Yeah. And did he go right to New York out of high school?
He did. He did.
His best friend,
yeah. His best friend, Butch Trainer, who is a dear friend to me, lives down in Florida still, or right now retired down there. He and I just talked about some stories. He said, because he went along with Dad, because Dad said, we're going to go to New York and be actors. And Butch is like, okay, we'll try it. He didn't know anything.
They
went together and they lived in a tiny little hovel in Hell's Kitchen. And they paid was it like $8 a week or something?
So it was a week by week kind of place that they were in.
They at one point, I remember my dad saying they were, at one point it was eating saltine crackers with ketchup on them because you didn't have enough money. And they'd work down in Wall Street. And Butch told me they got a manager at one point that needed his upfront money, and then you could make him a star, which of course the guy runs off with their money.
Yeah.
But that was about the time he was done. So he went back to the lake and
he was more pragmatic. That's when your dad joined the Air Force.
Yeah, my dad said he stood in Times Square, and I think, I'm not sure right now, actually, I think they're all gone now, but there was recruiting offices for a long time
right
in Times Square. So he looked around, and he's like, Army, it's a lot of walking. He says, Navy, I don't do boats. My father was not a huge fan of boats. And he said, Marines, they're intense.
The
Air Force will work, because he said, no one in the right mind is going to put me in an airplane. So he figured he was safe.
I'm too tall for an airplane.
So he joined that. that. Went through basic, was stationed in Missouri, Ohio, during training things. He, at one point, the story to Alaska that he tells, and obviously we have to figure out what grain of salt to take with this, but he says that he was switching shifts with a buddy, and they were outside of New York, and so that he could go into New York and work on shows. And the sergeant found out about it and said, "Oh, you want to do theater? Well, you can go do theater in Alaska." Now, my father couldn't even, spell Alaska. He didn't never heard of it.
He's Alaska where? Coast. What?
I'm told by people who knew him when he first got up here, his accent was so thick. You know, he had a Boston thick accent. Yeah. Couldn't understand a word out of his mouth. So people that know him, in more recent years, I mean, he trained himself out of his accent.
Because I never heard it. When I read that he was from Boston, I thought, wow, and I never knew that from listening to him.
He actively trained himself out of it. He came up here. He met Frank Brink, who's really, I think, the founder of Theater for Alaska, who became his mentor. And he had a chance, what I love about Alaska, and this is probably speaks to why I'm back and being part of community here, is that there's opportunity, there's possibility. We're a very encouraging environment up here. Like, hey, you want to do something? Let's do it. Let's create something.
Right.
And back then, he said, it was like the Wild West. You had the soldiers and, there wasn't a lot going on up here.
Yeah.
So people would go to church. They'd go to the theater. There'd be hundreds of people auditioning for a show because,
it was something to do. Yeah. So community theater. Yeah. Let's see. What else do I want to ask about your dad? Because I got to hear you speak the other day at the Unitarian Church because you just were a guest speaker for them. And you told some very funny stories about, being a child, being placed on the stage at a very early age. Yes. I know the classic story is you were 10 weeks old. And one of the things you said that made me laugh was, I know what my father thought. But what did my mother think?
I know. And I only thought of that in recent years where I thought, gosh, what was my mother thinking? My birthday's in November. So count 10 weeks from that.
Yeah.
It was winter.
Yeah. That's
a little baby.
And you didn't have a speaking role or a crying role or anything.
Didn't.
I've seen a picture.
Yeah. There's pictures.
It's a fact.
It happened. But, and my dad, one of his old friends, Jim Polsky, who was the first president of the board of ACT, so he goes back to those days too. And he told me when he was up this summer that, that dad did, it was all planned. Dad's like wanted to be able to tell later the story that I'd been on stage that young. That was entirely the reason to put me in the show.
Yeah. That's so funny. But then it continued. I didn't know that until you started talking about it. And I loved the story about the carousel horses that came from Sears, which is
about to close its doors. I know. I saw that.
And so, here you are in Anchorage. They borrowed the horses.
They borrowed the horses. They stuck them on the Revolve at Grant Hall Theater stage, which, those who have been there, there's a piece of the stage that will turn around like a turntable. It'll turn around. So when it was first brought in or put in, it was going right now. These days it's a kind of you have to kind of shove it along, but back then, so they had all the horses and people on the horses. They couldn't go up and down, but they could go around.
This was Carousel, right?
Carousel, the opening scenes of Carousel. So we're going around, and this is luckily a rehearsal, and people start getting off the horse as the scene progresses, their lines, their music. And so as it goes, the Revolve gets faster and faster because there's less weight on it, and they hadn't thought about that. And I guess I'm still on it. I'm 6 and a half. And so I went flying off a horse. Luckily, I don't know if this is lucky. I flew into a theater curtain, those thick
floor
curtains. Soft. So I went into it and then slid down onto my bottom on the stage. And my dad went, break, take a break. And he tells me that he said, "Money is no object. Don't tell your mother." And I have no memory of any of it. I remember other things about that production, but I don't remember that. I must have blacked it out. I must have gone, okay.
And there was one other story that just made me laugh so much. Which was The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. I was 13.
Yeah. Okay, so a little older, a little older. Preteen.
Probably could have, thought things through a little bit, but they had a cauldron on stage made out of the letters Oz, and the witches scene was going on, and all this dry ice was going up into the air. And onto the cauldron surface. And then after it was a dance number that me and some other teenage girls were in. And we'd come crawling out and we started falling immediately because it was a slippery kind of mylar surface.
You couldn't get out.
So we're falling and falling and we're trying to do our dance and we're flom, boom, boom, boom. And I'm horrified because I am raised by Bob Pond. It is all about being professional and doing your job on time and doing the best job you can. I mean, he was hard on me in shows. Yeah, because he didn't want people to think he was playing favorites. So, at rehearsals and many people who were in his shows will probably remember this. He'd do these big shows, which was wonderful. Talk about community.
Mm-hmm. You needed almost everybody in town to be in it.
Forget how many kids he'd throw in a show. People don't know that about him. They, that he would.
Are you in it or not? Yeah.
costume people just couldn't stand him for that. But yeah. he'd have these huge groups. So a lot of people are talking in rehearsal, and he looks at me and goes, "Stop talking," you know?
And everyone would look at me like, "Sorry."
So you can imagine, I'm flopping around on the stage thinking, oh, he's going to kill me. And I fell back in to the cauldron, and another girl fell on top of me, started laughing, and I like barked at her to shut up. Not realizing that the microphone that the wizard uses was on under the stage.
So the whole audience heard me
like yell at poor Laura Mo about laughing because it was so funny that we were falling.
And so did you have a price to pay with your father after that?
No, I don't think I did.
He forgave you.
I think he did. You know, with my dad, the bark was always worse than the bite.
Yeah. I told you as we were sitting here waiting for the show to start, I had heard a story from our own community. I have a friend that I walk dogs with, and Turns out her daughter was in one of your youth.
Yes, a couple of years ago, when I first came back, yeah. I did a production with A.T.Y., Susan Gold Jr., I think.
And what she told me was, it made a huge impression on her daughter, who is apparently now pursuing musical theater in Chicago, studying
Yay.
It. But that professionalism that you mentioned that you got from your dad, that's sort of what she relayed to me, that you had relayed to these young people, which was something like, you know, if you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, don't bother coming.
Oh, my gosh. I so hope I didn't actually say that last part. I don't remember this, but I'm sure it was implied because that's, again, from my dad.
Okay. Well, I want our listeners to know, if they've just joined us, I'm talking with Teresa Pond. She's the... Is it producing artistic or artistic producing?
Producing artistic director.
Okay. Of Cyrano's Theater Company, which has made a big move this year to an art center in DeBar. Mm-hmm. She has not taken the mantle this year. You actually took the mantle a year or two ago.
January 2016, I started with Cyrano's in this job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we welcome listeners to give us a call. We're going to talk in this next segment a little bit about that Cyrano's transition.
Uh-huh.
So our number here is 550-8433. Or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's talk about Cyrano's, because I think people were surprised to find out that it was going to move. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about the timeline and the decision.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's it's, you know, life happens when you're making other plans.
Yes, right.
And be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Right.
We were all looking at what is the future of Cyrano's. That doesn't imply at all that we weren't happy with the present. We were all very thrilled with that. I stepped into the job because I admire and love what Cyrano's has been and mm-hmm. what it stands for. Sandy Harper had hired me, gosh, probably about 12 years ago now, for the first show I directed for her. And I did many with her. And she and I really cut from a similar cloth when it comes to the passion for theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, it made a great impression on me that she would just say, "Teresa, I know you are going to do anything you need to do to be 110% for the show, and it will be the best show it can be."
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a lot to me, that mm-hmm. she had that faith in me.
Yeah.
And so we had a similar mindset of how the theater should run. It's a eclectic, varied types of work, but it's the most professional and highest artistic standards that we can aspire to, and that we're working with local artists to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We also share a love of new plays and new play development, which is something for me that came more recently when I moved to New York and got involved with new play development there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right here in Alaska. Sandy was already doing all of these, you know, really
right.
cutting edge things.
Right.
And
right.
Jerry, you know, of course, you know, was the impetus for mm-hmm. for much of this. So so it was a legacy I was honored to step
into. And they located where they located because they owned that building.
Yeah, right. And back to, there's opportunity again. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, my dad getting off a plane in the Air Force, and there was a guy who was, you know, building theater, and he got involved. Alaska's a place of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, it just feels like, it's not that there aren't opportunities other places, but we're just a little, I don't know, rougher around the edges. There's a little more openness to try things.
Right. I remember that. Yeah, I remember first Cyrano's was a bookstore, and there was a police substation on the corner, which later became
the theater.
I mean, talk about pragmatism, right?
I know. The dressing rooms, like, people used to say they're the jail cells. I don't think that's actually how it worked, but it's a good story.
Right.
So, no, we're going along, and then... how did this start? It started just simply by asking questions of what's Cyrano's 2.0 going to be? Where do we want to see Cyrano's go in life? I had no idea of moving when we first started talking about this. Meaning the board and I, just talking about, you know, strategic vision moving forward. Mm-hmm. We want to honor our legacy and our founders, and we want to see, you know, how to take these traditions and move them forward. And so one idea was, well, you know, maybe we want to, you know, perform in other spaces as well. I don't know. And I realized
not this, just downtown,
not
but
just downtown, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it was all like very, you know, open possibility. Mm-hmm. There was this building that has an incredible legacy as an arts center. And guess what its legacy is? It's doing co-hosting and productions with other groups in partnership, creating their own work that is, you know, innovative and pressing boundaries and getting audiences to think about things. And also, you know, including other art forms, visual art, music, mm-hmm. lectures.
And of course, you're speaking of the art center that's on
and
the barn.
And I am. Sorry, I was being a little crafty there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Out North Contemporary Art House was doing these things. And that is so much the legacy and foundation of what Cyrano's, through Derry and Sandy, has been doing.
Right.
And so, you know, we're doing it in different ways, but doing a similar idea of what an art center could be.
Right.
And the building, you know, was having to shut down at the moment. You know, Out North was moving into, you know, more producer programming.
Right.
And everybody was trying to figure out what was going to happen with the building.
Which is an old library.
It was an old library.
Yeah, public library.
So
yeah.
We just sort of started those conversations to see, mm-hmm. and the opportunity and the fit seemed right.
Mm-hmm.
And it entirely was kind of its own parallel, like a different path that just appeared to mm-hmm. start exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a big decision.
It was a big surprise, probably, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember speaking with you last summer. We were uh-huh. trying to have you on and we were chatting.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, it was still a big
we were
news.
In the,
you know, uh-huh. now it's sort of settled in and you've opened there and all that. But you talked to me about going through that your dad had gone through this moving ACT from Grant Hall out to 70th and Old Seward, and that at that time you were like, no.
I was. But my father my father had retired, but we were both watching this, and ACT had very wisely made a change where they weren't doing all their shows at Grant Hall. Doing some shows there would still be exciting for them, but they were looking to scale down because it was tough times, mm-hmm. you know, in the mm-hmm. city. And we were looking, you know, how does this theater continue and survive? And they could have their own space on site. I had never thought of that. My father hadn't. So you're absolutely right. I heard about that idea and I said, are you crazy? Oh, you can't do that. What are you?
Mm-hmm.
I had those feelings.
Yeah.
You
about
know?
ACT.
Absolutely
yeah.
about
mm-hmm.
ACT. And mm-hmm. I and yet it is a wonderful space and mm-hmm. it is a fantastic.
I've been to lots of shows out there.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean they were right to do it. ACT
right.
was absolutely right to make
right.
the decision they did.
Right.
Was the transition like completely smooth for all of us thinking about it? Well, no, of course not. We had moments of, wait a minute, but that's different.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for what ACT is? Oh, it still means this about ACT, and it opens up this other new thing about ACT.
Mm-hmm.
I call it transitional anxiety.
Right.
I think we all have it in life.
Right,
you
right.
know, we're used to something
one
way.
We don't like change.
We don't like change.
And sometimes, you know, what the future is going to be, we're trying to define it by the past.
Yeah.
And that it might not be the same as the past.
No.
You maybe can't define it by what
well,
the past
and, was. And you can see that the core tenets of what your foundation is, if they're staying strong, which they are for both ACT and for Cyrano's with our changes, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you want an artistic organization that is successful, has the room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy to have room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity for Cyrano's Theater moving into this building for us to grow. More important to me even than that is it's an opportunity for an art center to stay alive and well in Midtown and East Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually in Midtown, and it's right near East Anchorage. It's incredibly close to downtown. It's incredibly close to lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's an area that can access the communities around it with arts, you know, more directly, closer by,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, we don't have to go as far over across town somewhere else. I think all different parts of Anchorage, we want to have places of art to be able to grow.
Right.
And this was a building that gets to have that continue.
Right. And we don't know, I don't know, and you probably don't know, what will happen to the old Cyrano space.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Downtown is very valuable,
mm-hmm.
and we love downtown as a community, so mm-hmm. I certainly have very high hopes for mm-hmm. lots to be possible down there.
Yeah.
You know, the Harpers are, you know, we're very lucky to have that building, and Sandy, I'm so happy that she does have it.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the distinctions might be ACT is very community-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
almost very inclusive. Anybody, whether you have experience mm-hmm. or not, you can come and try yes. out the theater. Now, Cyrano's is really different than that. So talk yeah. about the differences between
sure.
those two.
We're certainly both very engaged with the community. It has to do with how I understand the terms we use to describe different types of theaters. Mm-hmm. Anchorage Community Theater is a community theater. That is a passion, certainly for me and was for my father. Anyone can come off the street, walk in, audition, and have the process of understanding what theater is and be part of a show. Mm-hmm. We still want those shows to, of course, be wonderful and well put together and all the goals.
And they, many of them are.
And
I've
really
seen lots
are.
Of ACT productions
oh,
that are
gosh.
Just stunning.
Well, I ran ACT in the 90s and I was out of college, and that helped me launch to go to grad school in New York because I had this, you know, this background of some really strong work there.
Yeah.
So it's process oriented mm-hmm. to me. And community theater is about the process, the experience of being part of putting a production together and on the stage, and then the audience getting to receive that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Professional theater to me is a little more product oriented. We're about the piece that is going to go onto the stage for the audience being the most professional, highest artistry that it can. You're finding the right people for the sake of the artistic product that you are creating mm-hmm. with the work.
Right.
I want everyone to have a good time along the way, and I think most of the time they do.
Right.
But the focus, first and foremost, is the work, is the script, is the production mm-hmm. that's going to be put on stage.
Mm-hmm. Less so is the actor having a good time or learning something new. It's like, what can they deliver?
In all the best ways. And so we pay a professional stipend. It's small. It's a little mm-hmm. fee right now, but the point is, we are paying you for the services, the talents, the expertise that we see in you for mm-hmm. this role, for this design, for mm-hmm. you know, for directing, yeah. whatever it is.
Yeah.
The same as we pay a royalty to a playwright mm-hmm. for their work, mm-hmm. you know. And so we try to make sure that we can do that as much as possible, even mm-hmm. if it's a small amount. It's a token, but it represents our regard for your services, for your work that
right.
you put into the
right.
work.
So that will continue. That was the yep. way Sandy ran.
That is, and that comes from them. That comes from the Harpers, and
right.
Absolutely mm-hmm. Is the way we continue to run.
So, you know, it's still so new. I think I learned that you might not be doing 12, one a month. You know, that was one of Cyrano's, notches on the belt there. And I don't, looking at your season, mm-hmm. which I have here in paperwork, or maybe you have it over
yeah.
there, it looks like it is not one every month, but...
Yeah, and actually even with Sandy, the calendar works out where it becomes about 10 shows over 12 months. You know,
okay.
you can't quite get each one, but there is a show within each month that would be coming mm-hmm. Coming along.
You touch each month.
You touch each month, yeah.
Okay.
Long term, for just financial sustainability and the resources with the artists in town and who has time and what talents we want to all use, and as we know, those in the arts, there is so much exciting theater going on in Anchorage. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people and a lot of groups doing stuff.
So it's hard to steal those actors away.
You don't want to wear everybody
pool.
Out.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about it, I'm amazed at how much theater there is. And the
yeah.
youth theater, my own daughter, when she was in school, uh-huh. it was the way she spent her summer, you know,
yeah.
she didn't really aspire for the theater, but it was a really fun thing to do.
Oh, good.
And there were so many benefits later that you see.
There are so many things you learn from being on stage, skill
yeah.
building, confidence,
yeah, confidence.
All the things that Junction. Creativity, yeah,
yeah,
judgment.
Yeah.
It's really something. So yeah.
So it's almost a feeding ground. I see
yeah.
it too in the local music where they've got all these open mics for under 18, I think,
uh-huh.
you know, and they're, you know, and I've heard Laura Oden talk about the need for a young person to get up and stare at that mic and then stare at the audience over the mic and then
yeah.
and then sing their song, you know, that's all part of a process that has to go on. And we've got that in theater here.
We do.
And
we
I think we've
do.
Seen some kids come up through that and become professionals, right?
We absolutely have. First one that's coming to mind right now, because I just saw her doing some work up here recently, was Irene Bedard,
mm-hmm.
You know, film actress, stage actress. She, my father was her first director. She
wow.
was in The King and I when, I'd say I was 11, so about 82, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Aaron Young is an actor on Broadway. He was in Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway, you know, year
I
before
didn't
last.
Know that. Yeah.
He was one of my kids when I was running ACT.
Wow.
And there's many more.
Yes.
I'm picking a couple of names. But,
you know,
and those are ones going to those particular pinnacles. There
right.
are hundreds and dozens of children who go through the theater and do theater around the country or
right.
perform, even if it's, you know, part-time
right.
with other things.
Right. I think I saw a woman who I'd seen on the stage at Cyrano's. Can't think. Pussycat or something like that. I can't remember the name of the play, but I believe she's now on the one of the people running ACT, Colby.
Colby Bleicher.
Yes, that's it. That's right.
Yes.
You know, professionally studied theater in college.
Yes. Yep. She went to NYU and studied directing in the undergraduate program there.
Yeah.
And she chose to come home and wants to be part of theater here. We're very happy to have her. She directed for us this year and acted and actually co-produced.
Yeah.
There's another one. She and Ryan Buehn have a group called Blue Chair Productions. So it's kind of the young millennial theater artists. Telling their stories.
Yeah. So we're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit more about Cyrano's, and then we'll talk a little bit about you and how your career developed and lessons you've learned along the way.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So we're listening to Teresa Pons. She's the producing artistic.
That's it. That's
going to throw me every
you
time.
You have to produce the art. Producing artistic.
Okay, there you go. And so I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm here with Teresa Pond.
Hello.
Hello. And we were sort of talking about the transition. We were kind of in the Cyrano's transition, and we were just talking about how, there was a slogan at Cyrano's, a play a month, and we talked about how every play touched a month, even if it wasn't exactly 12 plays. But there's also this idea of co-producing, and I don't know how much, I think Sandy had RKP, I'm not sure.
Sandy had started this, groups like Brown Eyed Girls.
That's right,
you know,
Tosspot Productions.
Tosspot Productions is a wonderful group that has and does, work with us. Sandy had the vision.
Yeah.
I mean, she really did. Not just putting up shows that Cyrano's is producing, which is, of course, our main passion, but inviting other groups who maybe are smaller, or they don't have the nonprofit status umbrella, or they want to do a show.
Not all the time, but just one show.
And they have a voice.
Yeah.
And they have a specific voice and a passion. And so I'm just continuing the mantle that Sandy began there. And so part of our show a month, or shows throughout, is that we can also have space in our calendar to co-produce.
And you're doing some of that in this season, right?
We are. The show we have right now is a co-production with Alaska Fine Arts Academy, and it is called Disenchanted. And so we're playing together on this one. In April, we're going to do a production with RKP Productions. RKP is for a small group that is my father, Dick Reichman, and Bruce and Audrey Kelly.
Right,
and
that's the RKP.
To do the shows that they wanted to do.
Right, and that one is actually a local playwright.
Shotzi
Schaefer. I remember going to see her plays, Foreplay, out north a while ago, and really, really enjoyed them, and happy to see her back.
She's excited. The play is called Spikes, and it looks at the Enron scandal, which is very timely.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, corporations.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, it'll be fun.
I'm going to welcome a caller on the line. I'd like to welcome Jeanette from Palmer. Hi, Jeanette.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to jump on the thing about you guys had talked about how Alaska is a land of opportunity.
Uh-huh.
It's going on about 20 years now, but I had just come back from deployment, and I had worked in professional theater in Atlanta as a lighting person and lighting designer, and I went jogging, and I had seen Cyrano's, and I literally popped in, and I believe it was Sandy was there, and they were doing Libby, I think is what
it
was.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Libby.
I got to talking to her, talked about what I had done as a background. They didn't happen to have a lighting person, and I was right there, and I got to work on that with them and do the lighting design for that play, and it was fantastic. But the funnier part of that was my first date with the love of my life, going on 20 years together, was at that theater for the opening night.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
A love story. Who knew?
So, So you guys are wonderful, and all those years of doing the plays and everything, and just for anybody younger person out there or an older person listening, you know, that is what's remarkable about this, is those opportunities and how you just go with your heart and things happen in Alaska. It's amazing.
Wow. That's a great, you go for a jog and you end up lighting a
Thank
show.
Thank you for that. That is a perfect way to put it. Go with your heart.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And I'm so thrilled for you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you and your father, and thank you for all that you put into theater here. You know, it's fun, and I know it's a lot of hard work, and I thank you for all that. And also for Sandy and Jerry for everything they've done, and all the people in Alaska who brought theater to people. So thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
What a nice call. Thank you, Jeanette. That's really nice. I bet you're feeling really good that you came back to Anchorage.
Oh my goodness. Well, it certainly was the impetus. You know, I'd been out in New York, you know, based there, working there, and a different place around the country, but I didn't feel that sense of home.
Yeah.
And I think this has always been. I was born here. I was raised in the theater here. Yeah. I've always been attached to Anchorage and to Alaska for theater. Yeah. Well, just for home.
I mean, I know so many young people that grow up here can't wait to get out.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I was that.
You were that.
My mother taught at the university here, so I could have gone to school here, and it would have been a little more cost effective for them.
Yes.
And I was out. Yeah. I was sure I needed to leave. I didn't know if I'd ever come back. Right. So I went down to California, where it'd be warm.
Yeah.
It's
a classic Alaska young person's view. Get me some sunshine, right?
But I also want to just touch on something that she said.
Yeah.
Cyrano seems to have quite the legacy of romantic connections and marriages.
Right?
And weddings. Yeah, people meet. They go on a date there.
People
have gotten married there. We've had weddings.
In Cyrano's,
yes. It's a lucky place. So if for no other reason,
come
if you're
to
looking
a show,
for love.
buy a ticket.
We have good love karma at Cyrano's Theater.
That's great. Let me throw our numbers out for our listeners, 550-8433, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So did we finish with the co-producing and co-hosting? You were talking about RKP.
Yeah, RKP Productions, Blue Chair Productions, Brown Eyed Girls in the Day, Tosspot, you know, and new and independent artists who have something to say. You know, we're trying to open the season so that, you know, our resources don't get, you know, too overtaxed to be able to do what I said about the great, you know, focus on great artistic product.
Right.
And there's all these other people in town that have wonderful stories and passions that they want to produce. So if we can make room in our schedule, it's kind of an ongoing process. I'm working on how that all balances. But the new building for us offers more opportunity as we work on repairs and improvements and, you know, getting everything up and running. There are two other spaces beyond the Black Box main stage. So there's two gallery spaces where we could have intimate performances.
Oh.
So that is on my long-range view.
I'm trying to think. I know that as you come in the door and you turn right and a hard right, there's a room right there.
Yeah, we call it the White Gallery at the moment. Our White Gallery is a large space that is certainly great for visual art, for rehearsals, but I think also for performances, for small, simple performances.
More intimate.
More intimate. So that's not set up today, but that is what we're working towards.
Like you said, possibilities.
And if you take that hard turn to the left, the smaller gallery, we're calling the Patron Lounge Gallery.
Oh.
And that is where we're continuing the Cyrano's traditions. You know, when you go get a glass of wine and a fruit and cheese plate and can watch the show, we can still do that. We're partnering with Yes Bistro,
which is right across the street.
Right across the street.
Well, that's handy.
And they are providing all sorts of like desserts and different little meals that you can take into the theater along with beer or wine and watch the show. And there's couches and chairs. And my thought is we can also use that space, which is even more intimate for our future performances. Right now, we're having our first visual art showing in the space this month. We've just started with Kate Goodrich, who is our new volunteer curator of our visual art program at Cyrano's.
Oh, long-time Alaskan artist.
We haven't put our press release out yet, but we're in the process of launching all that. And we have art on our walls, which is an important part of the legacy of the building and what Gene and Jay were doing.
Yeah.
So I'm really honored. But guess what? Sandy had visual art on the walls downtown.
She often did, and she often had themed windows. I remember the themed
windows. I know.
And sometimes food that was related to
she
just had
tradition.
A good time.
She is spectacular. Yeah. Her thinking, she would go away and she just goes away and she thinks about things. And then she comes back and she's got it figured out. And the brilliance that she comes up with.
It's really awesome. So, well, let's see. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, sort of your personal life. Like, you know, we did already talk about your dad, Bob Pond, but I wondered what was it like to be his daughter? And I sort of wanted to say, what's a daughter's description of Bob Pond? Lots of people knew him professionally. family. Yeah. And he was a tall guy, yeah, and he could be severe, you know, in demeanor.
He could be a little imposing. Yeah. Yes. You know, it's interesting to think about that, because my father had such a heart that people didn't always see right off the bat, because he wasn't as extroverted. He was shy. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing where sometimes he might feel a little off-putting. He's very, stern mm-hmm. face and mm-hmm. tall man. He was shy, socially shy. You sit down with them one-on-one, have a conversation. Oh my gosh, the wealth of information, of interesting discussion. And he would, he'd lay down his life for you. He would do whatever he could to be helpful to others, wow. Because especially, when you're looking in the arts, he was so passionate about it.
How did your mom and dad meet?
That's a good question. They met at a Thanksgiving party that my childhood dentist threw.
This is that got to be Anchorage then.
It was Anchorage. This is what's interesting. A lot of people move up here as a unit. This was not the case. My father had come through the Air Force. My mom, in a way, my mom was not the theater person.
Right. She never
comes up in
these
of her as the adventurer. Yeah. But when it comes to moving, she was the adventurer. She was in L.A. Working as a speech therapist, and she kind of didn't like it. She was kind of bored. She wanted to,
do something else.
Yeah, she wanted to do something else. Her father had worked on the Alcan during World War II as a work project, so she'd heard stories about Alaska. She gave herself a month to find a job, packed her car, drove from L.A. to Anchorage in, 1967.
Alone.
And she got a job offer in Juneau, somehow on the way up. And she looked it up, and it was it rains too much in Juneau for her. She was from California.
Uh-huh.
So she said, I don't know about that. So she went on to Anchorage, couldn't find a job as a speech therapist, but some guy hadn't shown up to teach a psychology class at the community college, which was at that point in West High at night.
Right.
So that started her academic career. And she was a professor of psychology through ACC and then Anchorage Community College and then University of Alaska Anchorage.
Wow.
She had a woman in her class who invited her over for Thanksgiving. And this was the wife of my dad's dentist. And my dad said that his dentist thought he was a crazy artist, because my dad didn't like pain very much, none of us do.
Right.
He would bring in a big reel-to-reel machine with headphones and listen to music while the dentist was working on him. And the dentist found him so strange. So he invited him over for Thanksgiving.
And your mom.
And my mom was there. And that's where my dad. My dad said he was supposed to hook up with this blonde, but he saw the redhead, and she was smart. There was something about her.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was your mom's name again?
Roberta.
Roberta. Okay.
Robert and Roberta. And they did not plan that.
And I wanted to ask you, you're so dedicated to theater. I was wondering, did you just don't want family? Don't have time for family? They've got this romantic story. What about
I know.
You?
I don't know. I got to get my romantic story.
Yeah. You've got good karma at Cyrano's. Right?
I know. I'm going to hang out at Cyrano's a lot. No decision whatsoever. Life continues. I've certainly, had wonderful relationships in my life, and my family is certainly made up of an incredible support network of wonderful friends mm-hmm. and family. My dog, Gracie, I need to make a shout out. She is the theater dog.
She's listening today, I'm
she
sure.
She is listening today. So that is certainly my child at this point.
Yeah.
But I'm just sort of open. Mm-hmm. I every now and then you think about that in life. I never made a decision not to or that I needed to. It was, see where life takes me.
Right.
I love my work, but it is very important to me to have balance in my life.
Oh, okay.
You learn that as an artist, because if you don't, it just burns you out.
Well, let's talk. I'm going to throw our numbers out one more time. And if you've just joined us, we're with Teresa Pond, the producing artistic director at Cyrano's Theater Company. Big changes in her life this year. She took the mantle of Cyrano's in mm-hmm. the last couple of years, but made the decision to move the theater mm-hmm. to an art center on DeBar Road, which was a big move, and sadly lost her dad, who was really a founder, one of the pillars of theater here.
Yeah.
So we're just talking a little bit about personally your choices and how, I'm thinking I want to ask you a little bit. It's fun knowing your dad left Boston, Massachusetts as a high school grad.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to sort of go to your decision to take on New York City. What was that like?
I was in graduate school at UC Irvine in Southern California, and it was, where am I going to go from here? As a director, it's hard to get jobs as a director. Actors can go to auditions. What do directors do? It's all who you know. And that's hard. I mean, you apply, you can put resumes out places. More often than not, it's just one job at a time connecting you to a network of more people to you know.
You can't be shy then.
You can't be shy. My father had had his years in New York. He'd been in New York right out of high school. And then after he got out of the Air Force here, he went back in like 60, 61 to try it again just as a professional actor. He spent a couple years there and then he just decided that wasn't for him.
Mm.
He loved what he did. But, you know, he chose to come back to Anchorage and he chose to run the community theater and to open up opportunities to people. He knew very well what he was giving up and what he was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up with those stories.
Mm-hmm.
One would think I'm a lot more of kind of the chatty, warm and fuzzy type than my poor father. Mm-hmm. So California seemed like where I would stay. But and I love, by the way, what I do on my free time is I'm a huge movie fan and I love film and TV, you know, like TV film and British television and all those things. And so but I don't do that as my craft. You know, I do live theater. So I thought L.A., I don't know. It feeds towards the film industry.
I might end up in film and that's not really
what
I want.
I might have been. Who knows what would have happened if I'd done that. But I wanted to try New York. I remember in Irvine thinking, I want to go try it so that I don't wonder what if I had tried it. Mm-hmm. That was really the biggest thing.
Question mark, you can't.
Yeah, I didn't want to have a regret. Mm-hmm. You know, in my life, that's probably when we talk about choices, I don't want to regret. You know, after undergrad, I'd come back to Anchorage and I ran Anchorage Community Theater in the 90s.
Were you the executive director?
I was the executive director.
So not necessarily directing plays
I
as
did.
Well.
I directed as well. Okay. So I really served as artistic director as well, but I had the title of executive director.
Okay.
And I could have continued to stay there and loved it, but I didn't want to wonder what if I had tried the professional directing career outside as well. I had to be able to try it to know. And so that sent me to grad school, and then that sent me.
And that was where was it? It was Irvine.
Irvine.
So you were familiar with that part of California, so you went back there.
Well, it was a wonderful program. I mean, I really went for the program. I didn't expect to stay. You know, I went to basically Orange County for both undergrad and graduate school, but I don't have family in that area. I just found really good programs that I liked in both cases.
And what would you say about that grad school that you liked? What you know, what's it known for, or what did you get out of it?
Oh well, for one thing, we have the acting. Guru of sorts, Robert Cohen, who's written some of the most wonderful of training books on acting. He is a professor there, has been a professor there. Keith Fowler, the directing professor there, was well known for having a strong regional theater background, a strong classical theater background.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran it with a bit of the British system. We would meet once a week with him at his home office and discuss like the most, you know, deepest esoteric ideas of theater. The program was set up in a quarters. You know, the University of California works in a quarter system.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So three of those four parts of the year you're in school. And so each quarter was a different theme. You know, we would do, you know, comedy, or we would do, you know, classic, or, you know, whichever the theme was that we were focused on as directors.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do lab work, and you got a lot of feedback. One of the things I wanted was feedback. And boy, be careful what you ask for. You know, when you do a play, you'll get some feedback. But as a director, just with your art form, with your skills, you know, I knew that I didn't, you know everything. I was, you know, in my 20s.
You have a relationship with the artists.
Yeah.
You are thinking about the audience.
Yeah.
You've got the play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot to navigate.
Yeah, and a director's job is to be the interpretive element. You take the words on the page and you interpret it into this fully realized production that we watch, see, listen, and experience.
Right.
So, you know, that's a critical piece. It's really interesting to think that, you know, directors as an art form came along much later, like after everything else.
Yeah.
You know,
there's the playwright, there were the actors.
Yeah, playwrights and actors. They started back in the cave diet.
Yeah.
You know, and in Shakespeare's time, Shakespeare went out and he wrote the play and he told the actors where he wanted them to go.
Why is there a need for a director? Help me know that. I mean, because a playwright thinks they've built it into the play.
Yeah, they built it in.
So what does the director do?
Well, and you're talking to a director to get that answer because, you know, a playwright might give you a different answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But because I think you need another set of eyes, of ears and, you know, the senses to fully realize a possibility for the written word.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be exactly what the playwright envisioned. It could be something different.
Mm-hmm.
The hope is it's a positive direction. Sometimes, you know, a playwright will go, whoa, that's not at all what my play is about.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, we do this every day in life. You know, you and I walk down the street and we both see a little girl eating an ice cream cone.
Mm-hmm.
We will then tell the story about that probably very differently because we both had different visions of what happened.
Right. Now, the other piece of this is the audience. And, you know, I always thought when I went to see a play that I saw the same play that everybody else had seen. And then I learned that it could have been different last night, much because the audience
Yes.
React. So there's this wild card here,
total
which is the
wild
audience.
Yeah. You don't know what they're going to do. On Broadway, shows will have 3 weeks of previews. Often, and that's a lot of shows that we call a preview, where it's a performance, it's for the public, but it's still rehearsing. We will watch and see what the audience does, and then we'll have rehearsal during the day the next day before that evening's preview to maybe tweak things.
Mm-hmm.
We do that because, yeah, the audience gives you a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in our world, I'll get like one preview, and then an audience comes in.
not a lot.
Not a lot of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, an audience is, you know, it's the final element. It's the other 25% of the
yeah.
picture.
When you direct, do you try to sit in the audience?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just from your experience night to night to night,
mm-hmm.
you must come away with a different feeling about the audience every night then.
Yeah, yeah. Audiences will tell you all sorts of different things. I'll tell you one time, I directed a production of Alice in Wonderland at ACT in the 90s, which was so much fun. I did all these fun, creative things, you know, to create these creatures and this experience.
Mm.
I have a theory about Alice in Wonderland that it doesn't terribly work for me now as a performed element. It is, to me, meant to be read because the imagination seems to want to fill in the gaps. Because every performance I see, it's like something doesn't quite work and the audience doesn't quite receive it the way they do when they read it.
Mm.
And I remember sitting in the audience on opening night, and the audience definitely enjoyed it. And to everyone who was involved in that production, I am not saying anything negative at all. I loved our show,
mm-hmm.
and I think the audience has had a good time. But I could feel in my bones that the story that I was trying to tell hadn't quite landed with them, because it's a really hard, complicated endeavor to take Lewis Carroll's ideas and put them on a stage.
You can take a slice, but not the whole. Yeah.
Now, that's an extreme example. We'll often be like, we'll put a comedy together, and one night the audience laughs, and so the actors get used to waiting for a beat, and then the next night they wait for that beat, and nobody laughs.
Yeah.
And you'll have a show where you think, oh, no one's saying anything. They hate it. You go out in the lobby, they loved it. They were just quiet.
Yeah. They're absorbing it.
They're absorbing it.
I also thinking that Friday nights, you know, people mm-hmm. maybe worked all week and
yep.
they want to have that glass of wine and just relax versus maybe a Saturday or a Sunday matinee where people are going to the theater or something, you know?
You know, it's funny. It just came up talking about some of our productions of performances of Disenchanted, our current show. This last weekend, our first weekend was sold out. We're very excited. If you want to see it, get your tickets.
Oh, this weekend it's just opening?
This last weekend.
Oh, last weekend. Okay.
And so I'm telling people to buy their tickets early. Because we are filling,
mm-hmm.
and probably going to extend a little bit, but in the first weekend, the Saturday night audience was quieter, and then the Sunday matinee audience was much more lively.
Hmm. Now, maybe they were rested.
A lot of us would have said the opposite would happen.
Yeah, right.
You never know about an audience, yeah. which is part of what I love about doing theater as my art form,
yeah.
As my passion is, you know. It's not entirely up to me.
Yeah.
It's not entirely up to any of us in the artistic side of it.
Yeah.
The audience will tell us what they like, what they don't, and why.
Well, in all your years of directing up here,
mm-hmm.
what can you tell us about the Anchorage audience? I mean, you must have some things you've learned about the Anchorage audience.
Well, I'm back because I think they're just darn about my favorite audiences. Anchorage audiences are, it's kind of, we're talking about open to possibility of Alaskans. That resonates when they watch a show.
Uh-huh.
They will go with us to all sorts of crazy places.
Oh,
they love
they're willing to,
see. To they're
suspend.
Willing to. Absolutely. Yeah. The thing I tell directors, and I try to tell young directors, is we'll go on whatever journey you want to take us on. You just have to make sure we understand how the rules of the world work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can break those rules, but you got to understand that just let the audience know where we're going, and they're probably going to go there. Audiences up here, I think they really love live, you know, intense engagements,
mm-hmm.
exciting, you know,
mm-hmm.
Tantalizing,
mm-hmm.
you know. They're not a sit back and just, you know, I don't know how to put it, reserve. Yeah, they may come off that way sometimes, but that's not my experience of people
yeah.
up here. They're go-getters. They're lively and feisty and
so
vibrant.
How does that influence what you decide you would produce? Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
does it mean you wouldn't do Chekhov, but you would do musical? I don't know. I mean, just throwing that out there.
Absolutely not. It means that I will do with Chekhov or a musical work that will be as strongly passionate as it can be, as ways to have real, clear engagement with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes productions are put together that can be, I don't know, like a little distant from the audience. And I don't think our audiences want to feel intimate.
Mm-hmm.
We want to feel like we're part of the same family of what's going on stage, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'll tell you something else. It's like Anchorage audiences, they will go see theater all over in different groups and different companies. They're interested in the shows. Mm-hmm. They're interested in the titles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We have a lot of theater. We've talked mm-hmm. about that, established that. But you're not scrabbling for the same audience, you don't think? I mean, it's like, if do you worry about your season, how it plays with somebody else's season?
We all do to a point. We try to, some of us try to work with each other, different groups, to see if we can not open on the same night, for uh-huh. example. There's different styles of work going on, so we're not all on top of each other for exactly the same audience.
Right.
You know, that happens, you know, everywhere. It's like any kind of supply and demand. You know, if three companies are going to put on, you know, Broadway musical style show at the same time,
not a good idea.
It's just not. Yeah. Because I love audience, our Anchorage audiences, for this. They're interested in the shows.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
my job to keep them engaged with my company by giving them shows that they want to see,
yeah.
and stories they want to hear. And mm-hmm. then my hope is, as an artist, is that along the way I kind of nudge their thinking a little. I get them to maybe consider something they hadn't considered before. Mm-hmm. I've always said that my way of trying to change the world is one show at a time.
Mm. You know, the other day when I heard you speak at the Universal Unitarian, mm-hmm. you mentioned Irma Bombeck was just a yeah. huge hit, and yeah. the audience was filled with women. And sometimes I've been sitting at Cyrano's in its old space. I've been to your to the new space as well, and saw the World War One.
Yeah. World War One.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our Friend's the Enemy.
I saw that. But I sometimes feel like there are more women audience members, and I'm curious
that
about
that. That is statistically true. Across the country, you will see the statistics will tell you
uh-huh.
that their audiences are more female-heavy.
Uh-huh.
Audiences are, you know, often, for now this is for our, you know, our theater, the Western theater that we do, we'll have more audiences that are white. We will have audiences that are older. Theater is, all of us that work in theater are working to include and embrace our audiences that are coming, and how can we bring in new audiences? How can we bring in more people that don't normally go to the theater?
Which you need to replace your audience as it...
Well, we want to keep... Yeah, and so, you know, Irma Bombeck... in the spring, we had She Kills Monsters. In the fall, She Kills Monsters was aimed at people who love Dungeons and Dragons, people who are into gaming.
Mm.
We had tons of young people in our audience who were new to Cyrano's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so what I love about what Sandy and Jerry did, and why I wanted to be part of Cyrano's, is the varied, eclectic entertainment styles, the genres and the tones of the shows.
Right.
You know.
I think you said you're interested in classical, you're yep. interested in new.
Yep.
There's a third one in there. What was it?
Well, I love I love musicals.
Musicals. It was musicals, yeah.
I love yeah. I love new plays. I love contemporary. I love classical. I love new. I think I'd mentioned this weekend that as a director, when I would interview for jobs, sometimes I get the question, what kind of director are you? And I just hate that question.
Mm.
Because for me, and this is just for me, I'm a director that loves the variety of different types of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's stories. For me, it's all about telling compelling, powerful stories that I'm excited about. And that comes in a lot of forms.
Yeah.
And Cyrano's is exactly trying to do that.
Yeah.
We want to encourage our audiences to come in from all different walks of life.
Right.
So some people may be coming to Irma Bombeck, and other people may be coming to She Kills Monsters.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, oh, gosh, I just had a good question. Okay. All right. Teresa Pond, it's been just so fun having you.
Thank you.
Good luck. We'll see you over at Cyrano's on the Bar.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen. It's been a pleasure to be here. And I look forward to hearing from people what they want for Cyrano's.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have to tell it on the radio.
No,
they can find you over at Cyrano's.
Find me. Yep. Yeah. Check our website. Yeah. You can email anytime.
All right. And thanks to our listeners and callers. I'll be back as your host on Hometown Alaska next Wednesday, when we take a virtual tour of the new Art of the North Gallery at the Anchorage Museum, guided by its curator, Bettany Porter, art historian and artist Kest Woodward, and Aaron Leggett from the museum. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.